Welcome everybody to episode 333 of the Between Two Wheels podcast. Today, stage 9 from Avezzano to Napoli, 214 kilometers. It's we discussed this one yesterday, right? And I said, look, there's a very good chance here. Let's pull up the profile. This is Tyler Yonke. I hope everyone's having a good Thursday. Here's the profile, 214 kilometers. It comes down from a little bit of elevation there, down to the coast, some little bit of climbs. And in the last 40 kilometers, you've got four pitches that are going to be problematic. And it all depends on which teams want to control it, which teams can control it, and then what happens there at the end. And for what we ended up having was actually a pretty fantastic race to watch. We'll just get into the whole thing here, and we'll break down the finish as we get to it as well. Because before we get, let me see, here is the video we want to present. Okay, so here it is. This is the start of the race. We're talking about, it's all, and by the way, we heard that interview at the start there from Caden Groves, and his team played a vital part of this race. But you can see here, they come down, there's a sprint here about two thirds of the way through. And then there's these little kickers at the end. We talked about it yesterday. There was going to be four of them and they were going to be crucial. And I said, hey, look, you know, it Alaphilippe style type of person, Jonathan Narvaez over the last one. Maybe that's who it is. Maybe we got there. Okay, so right at the start, you had two Polte Colmette riders taking off, and I will get to exactly who they are. Let's take a look here. I want to be actually accurate for receiving any, and I had these bookmarked, and sorry, then they went away from me. So let's see if I can find them now. Of who was in the break. Two of these, right? I took bookmarked, but I finally found some stuff that, okay, it's not coming here. Okay, let's see if we can find it here. Postobon, I think, was the one of the riders that was up in the break. Here we go. Polte Colmette are the only team that are represented at the head of the race as their riders. Mirko Mastre and Andre Pietrobon, they took away from at the very start of the race. And then from there, it was just who's going to control it. A lot of boring stuff, but De Koninck was on the front doing a lot of work. So, which means they think Caden Groves, who we played up there at the front, is going to be a guy that's going to have a great shot at the finish, because they're putting their team on the front to make sure that break is staying in control and, you know, not too far out. You're not going to let these guys go too far. And more importantly, to keep everything together so that they come to the finish. The problem here is, I mean, Caden Groves, we've already talked about him. He can go uphill quite well. I think he had a bunch of, three or four stage wins in the Vuelta last year. So he does good in climbing stuff. But is this going to be enough to spit out, you know, some of the big riders? Now, we saw over some of these climbs early on, or, you know, the first few ones coming in here, there was an intermediate sprint. It wasn't really contested by, but yeah, Coy, Milan, Maliers up there, Caden Groves, and then at 57 kilometers to go, Max Schachmann hits the deck. He looked like he might have been hurt a little bit, but also going down in the whole melee was Geraint Thomas. It did not look like he was at all physically harmed. I mean, in fact, he said it was pretty slow pace. One, I think if he did go down, it was more like his bike got kind of caught up. He said he wasn't hurt, so it wasn't an issue. But that was a 57. The Ineos riders dropped back. They easily got him back into contention. And then they start hitting these climbs. And one of the first persons coming out the back is Jakobsen. And this you can see this group here is about 101 up the front, up off the road. They weren't really too concerned about the Postobon riders. Pietrobon was the rider, but the Polte Colmette riders going up there. But one of the first few riders coming out the back was Jakobsen. Tim Miller also coming out the back. There was Visma Lisa bike rider coming out the back. So you're losing two big sprinters right away, which is Jakobsen, who hasn't been in any sprints, because these sprints have been with a bit of a pitch before the final. So it's put in a little kink one of these days and then coming up here, it's pan flat. So it should not be any reason for Jakobsen to be missing out. But once again, we talked about Gourmet a few days ago. His teammates here, he's not in here. This would have been another good race for him because he does get up and over these climbs pretty good. But Jonathan Milan has really shown that he's been able to get up and over him. But coming up into the first kicker here, Alaphilippe, he sees a chance and he goes. Now, what's interesting here, you see right behind is an Alpecin Phoenix rider. I think it's Kony. I'll have to double check on the name, but he goes after him. And I don't think that is the right move, because your team has been on the front trying to control everything. And now you're going up the road. That does not seem to be the appropriate move. Why didn't you just get in a break to begin with? And I don't think, because now it turns out he goes up the road. He does a bit of work. Alaphilippe's up there. Kevin Vermaaka, Maestri, the Pulte Comete rider, he actually goes up there, stays up the road, and he continues going. Kevin Vermaaka comes up here for the American rider for DSM. And there's a decent group. Conchi, there you go. Conchi for Alpecin. Aski for Arkea or Groupama FDC. Sorry, Alaphilippe, Vermaaka, Maestri, and Peterbone. They both stick the breakaway a little bit, at least over the first one. They come up to the second climb, and then there's a little bit more of a shakeup. But what you end up seeing here is Alaphilippe staying off the front. Now, Conchi of Alpecin, he ends up getting spit out completely. So then it's on behind with Alaphilippe. Are we going to bring this guy back? And then there's some infighting that we've seen here with Trek and Alpecin. Who's really controlling things? Who wants to control things? You know, the other sprinters we've got in the mix here are Olaf Koy, but his team's getting depleted. Laporte just went home after a crash. You've had several riders go home for Visma, so they're not really going to be much for a chasing team. You've got Bora with Danny Van Poppel, but they're more in the mix for GC, you know, chances. So they're not really going to get up there in the mix. You've also got UAE, but they've with Milano, but they have Pogacar. So they're not going to put a riders on the front to chase things down. So you really do have Little Trek, and you really do have Alpecin that are the two big teams. Tim Miller's out the back. Sodal's not going to be interested in helping. Jakobsen's off the back. So they're not going to be, DSM's not going to be interested in chasing. So you're getting some weird Bahrain. Now, Bahrain, they could probably get some help up there with, Bauhaus. And then you have Jayco doing what they should do something for their guy Caleb, but we've seen kind of where they've been at as well. In the end there, 10 kilometers to go, they're still looking to get Alaphilippe. He drops his rider, his mate there. And then between the last climb over the top, Jonathan Milan is still looking good there. With the last climb until the finish, there's a bit of a on the last climb here, I guess, at 7.8. They already came through the flat. They're bringing Alaphilippe in. And Jonathan Narvaez of Ineos attacks. You can see him lining up, and he goes from 7.8 out. He immediately goes past Alaphilippe. There's a DSM rider that kind of tries to make an attempt, but it's not much of anything. And there's a decathlon rider as well. EF is kind of back there in the mix. And Narvaez is gone, and he's immediately got a nice gap. It looks like Ghana was possibly thinking of doing the same thing. He's kind of up there. Is he going to? But he would be pulling the group up to him, so he doesn't. I think it's Trentin tries as well, and this last climb was a decent climb, and Little Trek just kind of bides their time, holds it. They got Jayco, then comes to the front, does a little bit of work. 2.6 kilometers to go. Narvaez is still off by 8 seconds, and you're not sure who is doing any of this chasing behind. It is Little Trek. Right on the wheel of the first two riders of Little Trek, though, is Pogacar, and then he's got two UAE riders. I don't know if it's Novak, but it's definitely Milano is one of those. Then there's another Trek rider, and then Jonathan Milan. Back behind him, you have Caleb Ewing. Okay, Caleb has zero riders helping him out at this point. And by the way, I'm going to express what's going on here, which is, okay, you're at 1.4 to go. Pogacar, what are you doing up there? Because at some point, he starts elbowing with Jonathan Milan, and it's a little bit odd. Now, we're going to break this sprint down. I'm going to do it a little bit more in detail because this highlight captures it a little bit different. So perhaps let's get to the actual sprint here, and then I will walk our way in, which is a video that There's the exact same spot, but I think I want to take it from a little bit further out. So Well, that's 200 kilometers. I don't want that one. So Jonathan Milano, there we go. Is this the same one? This might be the same one. I want the sprint. I want the sprint. There we go. Now I got it. I got the right one going here. Okay. There we go. 2.2 kilometers. We'll keep walking away. This one actually, it breaks down the last few kilometers the whole way in. And you can see these riders right in here. You got Pogacar is in fourth wheel. He starts getting some bumpity bumps here with Jonathan Milan. And I'm like, well, dude, what are you doing up there? The last kilometer is pretty interesting because they come down into this and they do a whole 180. And they come out of this 180 and you've got basically the last, I want to say 800 meters or so. But Jonathan Milan, he starts 12 seconds up on everybody going into the last kilometer and a half. Let's break it down as we get it up here a little further. Once again, you can still see this on the front. There's two Trek riders. There's Milan. He's kind of on their wheel. But then right behind him in the mix is Pogacar. Now, on the wheel of Jonathan Milan is Caleb Ewing. So you're like, okay, Caleb, he's at least got himself up there. But he's out in the wind a bit. Up onto the right side, does you start to get some Visa Liseberg riders, and then Danny Van Poppel and his team is kind of a little bit mashed in there behind. So Trek comes into this. It's this 180. Jonathan Milan comes out of it. I'm sorry, Narvaez comes out of it. He's got, I don't know, a good lead, 900 meters to go. Trek is on the front. But up on the right-hand side, as we're looking at, actually on the roadside, you start to see Pogacar. Anyway, we're coming through these whole chicane here. You start to see Pogacar leading up Milano. He's got actually, I think it's Novak on his wheel. Coy is back there. He's got a teammate as well. And then you've got another rider behind is Milano of the sprinter for UAE. But they still haven't brought back Narvaez. And on the front is little Trek 1-2 with Jonathan Milan basically on their wheel. But Pogacar does this incredible lead out here. He goes straight through the group. He comes up to the front. He drags one of his own teammates. You can see his own teammate Milano slots in behind Olaf Coy. To the left of Coy is Caleb Ewing, and Caleb Ewing's on Jonathan Milan's wheel. And then you've got some UAE rider, you've got Trek rider peels off the front, and Pogacar just starts drilling it. Now he's at 400 meters. Jonathan Narvaez is still off the front. It gets closer and closer. In about 250, you start to, or about 300, 250, little Trek rider comes up there. Maybe it's Stuyven, finally comes up to the front, starts his big lead out. Jonathan Narvaez is now at 200 to go. He's not getting brought back yet, but the sprint is going full glass. But Jonathan Milan, we talked about him a few weeks ago, which was him leading out from almost 300 meters and holding everybody off at the line. This time he goes late. Now, I don't know if there was a wind condition, but he goes a little late. And we've talked about this last few days of different guys coming to the finish with gearing. And I've told you, when your legs are a little bit sapped, especially on a climb, you probably want to be a little bit more sprinty. But there's also the problem, too, of having a gear where you're spinning too much in a sprint, and then you're going to have to be like a track rider seated and sprinting. And it looks like Jonathan Milan actually gets it wrong here with his gearing, because he is torqued his way out, and he comes through, and they literally catch Narvaez here about 20 meters, because here's 50 to go. Narvaez is still in the lead, but now you see Jonathan Milan. He's sprinting up the front. To his right is Olaf Coy. Coy is looking pretty good. On the far end here is, I'm not sure who that is for. What's that? The Storrs team, whatever team that is here. On the far, you got Caden Groves way out there. Buried back in here behind a Wanty rider is Caleb Ewing. No lead out on the way. And then Jonathan Milan, it looks like he may be able to take it, but a throw at the line by Olaf Coy gets the stage win. And see if we have any kind of, nope, we don't have that. So I was hoping they'd have show a bike throw. We'd be able to see exactly where that was. So we'll get to all the stats here as far as the ride goes. And then we kind of break down that sprint a little bit. I just wanted to go through almost frame by frame to get us an idea of where it was. Olaf Coy, Jonathan Milan, Juan Sebastian Milano for UAE. So Pogacar's team ends up with the third place here. Danese, a Tudor, that's who it was, Alberto Danese. In fourth place for Tudor, Danny Van Poppel in fifth. Mattis Michaels for Intawanchi Marche in sixth. Caden Groves in seventh. Andre Vendrome in eighth for Decathlon, Davide Ballerini for Astana, Max Cantor for Astana. 11th place is Jonathan Narvaez. So that's what happened, where he gets caught at 20 meters to go and just sits there and is able to coast across the line, beating Caleb Ewing for 12th place. Now, look, this is what I want to say about this, which is, okay, so you've got Pogacar, who decided he's going to mix it up. And I mean, this is what the commentators are talking about. And I actually believe this when you see him coming in around 500-600 meters to go, and he takes it all the way to about 300 meters to go. That was an extreme change of speed. I don't know about extreme, but it was definitely a change of speed from the little trek lead out. And I don't think that, but for that, you are going to see Narvaez overtaken at the line. Reason being is they increased that speed. What it also did is it allowed the trek lead out to hold off. That guy that was in the front there, he was not going to want to come to the front too soon. Although, you know what, you never know, because if he comes to it sooner, maybe Jonathan Milan, sprints a little earlier and he's got his gearing a little bit different, and he may be able to take Narvaez like with a bike throughout the line and actually win that thing, because I think he needs to come from further out where he is able to get up and up and up to speed more and more and more and then sustain it. He was spun out on the line, and so either his gearing was wrong or what, I don't think they were going too fast where it's just overpowering. So Pogacar did what he had to do. What's interesting to me is, like, okay, Pogacar rolls to the front with another UAE rider. And by the way, that other UAE rider that was on his wheel, which was going to then lead out, he pulled out of the line. He pulled out of the line when Pogacar is on the front, because he's like, I'm done. That's how good and how fast that it reminds me of Matthew Van Der Poel coming and doing sprint lead outs for Philipsen that you've seen in the tour, where you're just like blinding. But that's what they needed. They needed that surge of power and that surge of speed at that moment. It was perfect, and it was great for then the next group of lead outs, which took them all the way to 150. And then Milan, takes off from there. But Olav Kooi is able to masterfully come around him. It looked there was two extremes of viewing this, which was Jonathan Milan was just because he was overgeared or undergeared, and he was spinning out too much, and his body's like looks like he's going to rip the bike apart or crash. Where Olav Kooi is a much smoother ride. Now, if you watch from the overhead and as much as you can from the different angles of Juan Sebastian Milano, he comes up there with the train, but he's got Pogacar, and then I'm just going to say it's Novak. I think that's who it was. It could be one of the other riders, or Stekenlagen maybe. That's probably more likely who it was, but when that guy pulled out. But you've got another rider, and then one or two, and then Jonathan Milano. I'm sorry, Juan Sebastian Milano back there just a little bit, and he slots in behind Kooi, and he does a good job, but he never is able to get that jump, but he was better than the others. My point really is like, what's going on with Jayco? You see one rider change this dynamic today, which is Pogacar. Okay, but what if you just had two riders getting him in position? I don't like what, because we've talked about and you've seen over the years Caleb Ewing getting in the mix and doing his thing, and he's could be somewhat dangerous, but he shoot gaps, he does whatever he can, and then he takes off. Also, we've seen where Caleb Ewing has had trouble, and he's like, you know what, I'm going from a long ways out, and he puts himself in a position to try to hold everybody off by sprinting from a long way out. He's not even trying that. I mean, he's just kind of sitting up there in top 10. If there's all this pressure on you, what is happening? And if you just get one rider, you just see that today. Once again, there were two riders going. Milano was being brought up with another UAE and Pogacar, but the other rider pulled out. And so it was really a Pogacar move of being able to get your guy sprinting up there in the middle. Okay. What Brian says, what's your shirt? It's a Tour de France Mont Ventoux edition. Happy Mother's Day, Gina. Thank you. Brian, same to your wife. Happy Mother's Day all around. Narvaez post race said he attacked because it sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's fun to try. Yes, it does. Similar to G Thomas adds to a lead out. So somewhat, you know, like Thomas did that for Cavendish famously last year in the final stage into Rome, which helped Cavendish win. It was a great lead out. It did extend that lead out train, being able to do what they had to do. It was a fast one, and Thomas put his effective to work. Today's was just a little bit different because that was Rome. It was wide open roads, and it was just G getting up there to just like, hey, I'm gonna do it. All kudos to him. That sprint felt a little bit almost gifty in a sense last year with Cavendish. This is not a gifty sprint. This was elbows out. This was a lot of that 190, you know, or 180 at 900 meters to go. It was a little different position to be putting yourself into, but I was pretty pretty amazed by Pogacar's ability. Where was Pogacar on the day? Oh, you know, and look at here. So we have a little sprint down here. Caleb Ewing, Luke Lamperti comes up here in 15th place. So Brian had asked about Lamperti before. There you go. Finally getting himself. Was he the top Seiko Sodell rider? He was. So good for him. You're not going to see Lamperti probably winning one of these stages here, especially with this mighty sprint team here. But it's good to see him getting himself kind of getting in the mix, seeing what's happened. This is a guy from Northern California that we were doing crits with just a few years ago. And it's amazing to see him out there doing what he's doing. Calmajon gets up there. I was going to say Pogacar. Turns out 27th place. Solid work for him. Okay. So what I thought I would maybe show you guys here is, because I talked about this after the time trial, I really wanted to see it, and I knew someone would come up with it. And we did finally get a chance to take a look here, which were breakdowns of the sprints. You know, first of all, this is a race in France here. I just saw this clip for. This is, I'm not meaning to laugh, but it's women's race. And watch this. So you got a team car up here. You got two riders off the front.
And
watch the team car. Boom, hits that girl.
Shoot!
I mean, that's horrible all the way. That's horrible all the way around. That's not where you want to. I don't mean to laugh. I've been there. That's the one of the worst things you can do for cycling, which is crash riders out in the break. Okay, so here's a breakdown of the climbs, the fastest ones up the climb on the time trial. Okay, and let me just kind of expand it here. And I thought this was very interesting to see. So this is from the bottom of the hill, basically the last time check up to the finish. And the times from behind. And then I also saw a Strava segment, maybe we'll show that too, of that first part of the climb is like the first, I don't know, kilometer and a half or so, and the times there as well. But Pogacar, 32 seconds over Danny Martinez. So, I mean, he just cleaned everyone out. But the nearest person up the top of the climb there was Danny Martinez, 32 seconds back. But then you've got a nice little grouping here. Ben O'Connor, 35 seconds to, you know, he had a really good day out. Antonio Tiberi, we saw him yesterday, 40 seconds. Shackman, 46. Magnus Sheffield, 47 seconds. So you really look at that and you're just like, wow, you're only like, what, 15 seconds, 13 seconds or sorry, off of Danny Martinez on that final section there, Magnus, doing better than Roman Bardet. 48, Lutsenko, he dropped out today because he was sick, 57 seconds. Jan Tratnik, 59. Kian Uttabruks, 58, sorry, for Jan, and 59 for Kian. Timon Arensman, 1 minute. Steinhauser, a minute. Verre, 102. Ghana, 104. Fertinano, 104. Zana, 112. Luke Plapp, 112. Geschke, 113. Jan Hurt, 114, Mikael Bjerg, 115, and Domenico Pozzovivo, 117, and Davide Piganzoli, 117. So a nice little smattering there, but it's always interesting to kind of see where those people are on the climb. That's really wanted to see a breakdown of, because I think that was a very interesting part. Okay, let's take a look at this one now. Let's see if I can get here. Okay, so here's just the KOM. This is the first section, the really steep section. Tadej puts in a 3:48. Roman Bardet a 4:04. Alessandro Veri, that's for RK, who's a 4:09. Ben O'Connor 4:10. So Ben O'Connor, I'm kind of looking at this just to kind of see where some of these riders are. Geshka, Parapente, and Timon. So you know, 3:48. You know, there was a definite significant time difference in this first section, but not a huge one. I mean, 4:10. Got, well, almost 20 seconds to Ben O'Connor. So Ben O'Connor loses that in the initial punch and then actually is able to hold on and not lose much more after that, because I think it was only 30-some seconds out on that point. So interesting there. It kind of a portend of things to come in this Giro with some of these riders and whatnot. Okay. I wanted to play a few quick interviews. Let's see, Cycling ProNet. I don't know, these ones seem to let me play these interviews without getting any kind of strike, so that's why we do it here on this one. And you get some good stuff here. So let's hear Jonathan Milan at the finish, and they're going to play a commercial, so I'll let that commercial go before, and then I can present it. Okay, here we go. Okay.
You will be tricky. He's now at the front. Can you describe us a bit how it went?
Yeah, it was quite tricky final. Not just a few kilometers, but from 30k to go was pretty tough. We know it. It was pretty tough. The course up and down, and we know that someone could attack from in this part of climb. Yeah, the guys, I think they just did a really good job for me to deliver me in the best position as possible. And yeah, just a bit disappointed from my side for what I did, for the sprint that I did. Just I think I was missing a bit of energy for the last few meters. I think I feel it a bit this climb in the last meters of the sprint for sure.
Were you surprised to see Tadej doing the lead out himself?
Oh no, I was not surprised. I was not surprised.
Okay, he was not surprised. Now, he didn't say anything about gearing, so I'm not shocked with that. I'm just it's just interesting to me because I thought maybe that was a problem. Maybe it wasn't the problem.
But yeah, we just committed then.
First of all, congratulations for your first victory in Giro d'Italia. It was really a thrilling finale. È stato veramente un finale da thriller.
Yes, it was. Like the other sprints. Quite challenging with some climbs in the final. Also some attacks. So. It was even hard to make it a sprint, but in the end we committed with the team. I was in good position every time, and in the end I still had something left and to win.
What does it mean to you winning against some great rivals like Jonathan Milan, Caden Groves, Caleb Ewan? What does it mean for you, for your confidence? You are so young.
Yeah, I mean, we knew that in this Giro would be really, really strong sprint field. So, that it's always big to win a stage in the Grand Tour, but especially also with some really strong competitors, it makes the win always a bit more extra.
All right, we will not keep going on with that one. I will look and see if there's another interview that I would like to go over. Let's talk to Geraint Thomas finish. He did go down, so we might want to be about, see if there was, once again, I got to get past one of these commercials. We'll skip that. Okay. Let's hear what Geraint Thomas said. And then we'll talk to Brian Zim. He says, you think Pogačar will nurse his lead to save his legs for the Tour de France? Yes. I think that's what we saw yesterday. He wasn't going for the stage win. And then when he did, he didn't go from down below, although I think he could have actually done that. Although look what he's doing today, you know, so I don't know. I think, you know, it's so much like what you saw with the sprinters here, which is they're saving their lead out team so you can do the lead out, but you got to catch the riders off the front first. And they had trouble a few days ago where they didn't do that. And then they're having trouble today of barely being able to do that. And it's like, okay, I get it. But you have to actually catch the break before you can start to look at winning the field sprint. So it's kind of the same thing, which is, okay, we're going to save our legs, but you just got to get this win. Now, in Tadej's defense, they've already brought the break back. Okay, he's got a huge enough lead here. Remember we said 14 seconds last year that Garrett Thomas lost? And I don't see Tadej, because there's talk about like the Grand Bernon and all these other stages of the tour where Tadej's had some issues. But then if you remember back, that was, 2 years ago, he was chasing down. He still had Roglic and he had Vingegaard. So he's chasing one and then he's chasing the other and then he's chasing one. And then he's dropping Roglic and dragging Vingegaard all the way up the top of the climb. And it's, losing some time on the next one. And then last year, same thing. He blew up, significantly on what was the big stage that Gall ended up winning on. And then he had some other time issues back and forth. But, we went through, 14 or plus stages with that lead, that kind of switching back and forth and being very close. You just don't have Vingegaard here. You don't have anybody that's going to threaten him that I've even seen. Yesterday he's just like soft pedals up to the group when someone's trying to take off the front and then decides to sprint. So when he saves, quote unquote, his legs, it's much different than what I think other people are doing. So, I mean, if it's not in the bag, I don't know what it is. People were asking him, are you sick? He says, I think I have some allergies. That might be what brings him down. And I don't know otherwise what else would. Okay, let's see what G has to say.
Going on a lot about safety at the moment, and that's definitely not safe, but just clowns in the circus, aren't we, sometimes?
Did you have any mechanical problems?
Why is it, can't hear this very well.
No, but obviously the chain's jumping everywhere, and it's just not very nice. It's pretty scary when you've got guys like desperate and bouncing, diving underneath you and all this and that, and then you've got massive holes everywhere, and just glad to get through that stage, to be honest.
Quite a nervous stage throughout, was it? Particularly this final, once we entered into Napoli.
Yeah, once you're in the final, it was chaotic, big time. But the boys, like we've been doing all week, really looked after me really well. So I was in a perfect place most of the time.
All right, we're going to drop that one because you just can't hear what the gentleman is saying very well. So that's not really good for this kind of show. We're like, hey, what's some audio? What do we got going on here? Okay, here's stage 9. Then we have a rest day tomorrow, obviously. And then we'll come into stage 10 and boom, we go up to the top here. So once again, it'll be interesting. What is the actual? Let's take a look before we walk on here. This will really answer Brian's question a little bit better, which is he going to save himself? Well, he's got the GC here. He's got 240 over Daniel Felipe Martinez. Daniel Martinez has only been in the top 20 of a Grand Tour once. And that was just a few years ago when he was riding with Bernal and he was fifth place. But that was, doing a lot of protection for him. So I don't know. We'll see what he comes up with. Obviously, Garrett Thomas can ride well. Do you foresee Garrett Thomas dropping Pogacar at any point? No. He might come out with a better time trial, perhaps, when we go up here and look at that. So, 240. I mean, 3 minutes to Garrett Thomas. 3:30 to Ben O'Connor, 2:40, almost 3 minutes already on Danny Martinez. I mean, yeah, save your legs, and if you need to, you can do some wicked stuff, which we got here. But look at even this; it's a Cat 2, and then you got a 4.8 kilometer, 6.5 with 40 kilometers to go, and then you do have this, pretty intensive 18.1 kilometer at 5.6%. Okay, that's a decent climb. It is only a Cat 1, but a lot of times you see these, Cat 1s or HCs after an HC, when there's been multiples during the day. So we'll just keep looking through here. I mean, then the night, so that's Tuesday, and then this is Wednesday. It's like, okay, well, there's a rest day for Pogacar. Thursday, okay, that's going to be up and down all day, but, maybe you let a break go up the road, some guys that are fighting it out. That are 20 minutes down and they get the win and your team just chills on the front. So then you've got this. Okay, Jakobsen finally gets a chance to get to the finish. If this isn't a pure sprint day, I will be surprised because you've got to be able to control this. You have all these teams that would be incentivized to do so. You've also got some other teams that are kind of the GC ones of like, let's just, I want to sit in today. could be a break, but I can't see a break lasting on a day like that, because now you got DSM. DSM finally has a day, and then you're going to have this individual time trial, which also is a Ganna style. This is going to feed more into the type of rider that Garrett Thomas is, but it's also fine for Pogacar because we can see how he time trials as well. But you know what? You have a chance to, okay, maybe Ganna gets the win, but you know, Taddy's going to save everything next week for that race. And then you do have this one, but once again, I think is this the one that was Stelvio? No, you got the Mortirolo. Okay, that's good. Cat one, you got a three, a two, a one. This might be one of the more, and then a one pitching up into a one. This is over on the weekend, I think 15, 16. I think that's where we finish on a Sunday. You finally get an HC, the Stelvio, and some other things. And then what do we have for the rest of the week here? The 17, stage 17. Okay, you got a little climby stuff here. I mean, you can't rest on your laurels here too much, Tade. 18, nope, no problem there. 19, okay, got a little climb. But once again, these are soft climbs. Cat 2, I mean, if you don't think Tade and his team can control that. And then Saturday, going to a cat one, but it's a downhill for the last 30 kilometers or so. I mean, this, if Tade really needs to, he can save up and just go for this one, crest the climb and just solo into the finish there. And then they got Rome. So that's what we have. I see no problems for Tade coming into this and being able to hold things out. So anyway, happy Mother's Day, everybody. We'll give a rest day tomorrow. And then we'll get a few days. I do have to do some travel, so we'll see. Maybe I'll take my laptop and try to do some shows because I have to do a little bit of traveling this next week. Until Tuesday, see ya.
Froome now, he goes on the offensive. He goes on the attack over the top of this final climb, and nobody at the moment can go with him.
He had 75 kilometers to go, and now under the Flamme Rouge, there he is still, the virtual Malia Rosa on the road. Who would have thought it at the start of today? But Chris Froome, master.